when they come, I hope I should be able to manage to speak to you for a little while.
Thank you.
I have heard about you from various people, about your many interests in regard to this work, and how anxious you are to obtain as much information, as much interesting matter, so that you can have the opportunity to play these recordings to various people at different times, giving you all the varying aspects of life as is seen and experienced by souls from varying planes and degrees of evolution. And of course, I'm quite sure that you must have had all manner of people. Indeed, from what I've been able to gather, you've had a very large group of souls attached to you for this particular work for some years. Some of these people have been coming to you for a very long time, and others have attached themselves more recently, knowing that all the help that can be given will be an asset to the furtherance of truth. I was thinking myself how very interesting it would be if perhaps some future time, not only should people be able to come and to speak, but perhaps to sing. Now, this may strike you as very strange, but I have been thinking myself how interesting it must be for people to be able to not only speak, but to be able to sing. I mean, for instance, I'm not saying that this is necessarily going to be immediately, but possibly, although I realize to do this, possibly a new set of circumstances would have to arise, and probably it would be in certain respects more difficult to bring someone like Caruso or someone to sing. Because I suppose if that were to be achieved successfully, I'm quite sure many people would be amazed and possibly convinced. Of course, one can never be sure what the reaction of some people will be, but when you consider the great souls that have come over here from your plane, great singers, great musicians, supposing it were possible to bring someone through who could play the violin, as perhaps only a Kreisler or some other great musician could play. I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but I've been thinking if we can produce a voice that is to speak, that is vibrate your atmosphere and create sound, it shouldn't be so difficult perhaps for a person to sing, or perhaps some soul to be able to play an instrument so that you could hear it. This is something that I've thought a lot about, and I've discussed it with various souls, and they all seem to think it's possible, although it might be more difficult, particularly with an instrument. I don't think you could understand the difficulties even if we would begin to explain them to you. Of course, I believe to some extent some of these things have taken place before. But of course it's very complicated. Not only have you got to create the vibrational sound, You've got other complications in regard to the instrument itself. Some people may think this all sounds very strange and perhaps a little crazy. But if we can materialize one thing, I see no reason why we shouldn't be able to materialize another. It will be doubly, trebly, perhaps more difficult, but we're going to have a go at it sometime.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you a scientist, Frank? How should I answer that question? Am I a scientist? Yes, I suppose in a sense that could be answered in the affirmative. I have a scientific turn of mind. I'm very interested in science in its many aspects. I was on your side and I am on this. And I'm hoping that at some future time that we may be able to try experiments in varying ways. I, of course, have heard all about materialization and all the other phenomena that has happened in the course of this spiritualism, as you term it. I wasn't myself interested in this subject at all. Indeed, I would have been horrified and possibly would have been very much, in fact, I'm sure I would have been very much against it, because I'm one of what you would call the old school, or what I should say I was. I was a typical product of my age. I went to good school, had a good education, lived in a highly respectable district, brought up by highly respectable family. So you can imagine from all that I didn't have much opportunity. That may sound odd when one thinks of the Victorian age, one thinks of class distinctions, one thinks of public schools, and one thinks of opportunities for the privileged. But seeing things now, I realize that there were privileges in certain directions, but we were all rather churned out like the sausage machine. Today there's much more freedom of thought, freedom of action. There's not so much snobbishness. There's much more chance for an ordinary chap to make progress if he's ambitious. In my time, you fell into categories. You were either sent into the army, or you were put into the church. Or usually the future was pretty well mapped out for you. Even your wife was discussed before you even knew about it. It was suggested that such and such a match would be a very good one. Of course, I'm going back a bit. But I was interested in science, but I wouldn't call myself a scientist. I was interested in many things. I was interested in philosophy and religion. I had a brother who was a clergyman. As a matter of fact, he and I never really got on terribly well. I don't blame him any more than myself. I suppose, really looking back, in certain respects, I was very much a person who hadn't time for the church. And yet I respected it. I went to church, but I wasn't a churchgoer in the accepted sense, although I had members of the family and my brother included in the church. My parents were very religious. Possibly that was another reason why I withdrew a little from it. I was brought up in a very heavy church atmosphere, where morning prayers were said, where one went to church three times on a Sunday religiously. Indeed, our whole aspect of life was bound up with the church, with the military. My father was a military man. Generations of our family were soldiers who were connected with the army, or a few with the navy, but mostly with the army. We travelled, like most families of our type did, quite a bit. My father served abroad. I went to India, spent a number of years in India. I became very friendly, as my position made it possible, of course, to be very friendly with many of the influential people. I saw much in India, of course, that aroused my interest in psychic things. I didn't prefer, because as I say, I didn't associate it with spiritualism as such, but there were so many things there that made me realize that there was a lot more to life, a lot more to religion than I'd expected or been taught. I saw the inside of many extraordinary places which were forbidden, indeed were not allowed to the ordinary visitor, and the white man in particular. I saw many of the experiments and many of the things done which one has read about. And of course I became friendly with several wise men who were going to trances and who would speak in various tongues and have long conversations in language which was completely foreign to them. And I had many experiences of being told things that would happen in the future, which did happen. I spent many years in India in the late 1890s and 1900s. I came back to England. I came back to England in the late 1920s. My name is Wilbur. Wilbur, of course. And we are connected with the, were connected with the Wilberforce, of course, that is so well known. We're the same family. Can you hear me?
Yes, I know.
That's a little bit difficult for me.
Mr. Wilberforce, how did you find yourself when you passed through? I mean, what sort of conditions did you find yourself in?
Well, very happy ones. Had no doubts. I suppose when I was on your side, really, in a sense, I had no doubts about life after death. I was an odd mixture, of course, with my background and upbringing and my interest in religion, inasmuch as I was interested in philosophy and religion. In India particularly, I saw much that aroused my interest, that when I arrived here, I suppose in a way, my having taken that interest in India helped me tremendously. I found myself in a very natural surrounding, in a very large, well, it was a very large room in which I woke. And around me were several people that I'd known. There was my parents. There was a sister who died when I was at school. She was only a young girl then. And two of my old servants that I'd been very attached to. One actually who'd been killed by a tiger, unfortunate, but a fine chap. And the many people that I'd known. But this room was extraordinary, I suppose, in a way, looking back, and yet I can see now that it was not for me extraordinary. But it was a very large room. Beautifully furnished, mostly Indian furniture, which I've been accustomed to for about 30-odd years, very nicely laid out. And I remember so vividly waking into this room and seeing all my friends and relations, and goodness knows, it seemed as if this large room was crowded. And they're all trying desperately to make me feel, in a mental way, I realize now, that they weren't actually speaking, but it sounded to me as if several people were all speaking at once, and it was as if there was a vast number of people talking at once, and yet, of course, I realized that they weren't talking. I was receiving their thoughts. I was conscious of many people's thoughts, but it came to me as sound, as if I was hearing people saying, "Hello, how nice you come," and "Hello, my boy." That was my mother, my father, And my sister was very young and very beautiful, a little older than I remembered her, because she died very young. She was a woman about 19 or 20. Very pretty girl she was, tall, graceful girl. First I didn't quite recognize who she was, and it dawned on me. She made herself known to me, of course. Mm-hmm. Everyone seemed anxious to welcome me. It was this wonderful feeling of warmth. It was almost, quite frankly, as if one gone to a party, as if everyone was there, everyone was dressed in what one would have thought was their best, but of course I realized afterwards that it was the natural way in which people dressed here. The Indians had their usual costume that I remembered and associated with them, and my mother had a beautiful gown. Strange enough, I remember at the time when I first saw her over here that it was a gown that as a boy I'd remembered seeing her going off to a ball. I remember very vividly, I suppose there again it was to do with my youth, my childhood. I remember how impressed I was and my mother coming down the staircase in this beautiful dress which rustled as some sort of taffeta or something. And it was a lovely lighter colour and she had beautiful gloves to match, and she had these big leg of mutton sleeves, and I remember how elegant she looked with her hair, which was an auburn colour, done very high, and she had some eagle feathers in her hair. She was going off to a very important do. I suppose I would have been about 10, but I somehow always remembered my mother right there, and we had a photograph of her taken in another dress of a similar sort of style. And somehow I always remembered and visualized my mother like that as a past memory of youth. And there she was, as much to say, oh, you always liked me in this dress that I'm wearing, especially for this occasion. And there was my father, dressed in a kind of grey suit, as near as I can describe it, as kind of suit that I remember again many years back. When I was a lad and my father was trying to teach me, or was teaching me, to ride horse, a pony actually. And he was out in the country. We had two houses in those days. We had a house in London and we had a house in Norfolk. And we used to spend most of the summers down there. My father used to take me out and we used to go walk us there again. He was very interested in shooting, being an army type. I was never very drawn to it myself, although I was associated with the army all my life later. But it was as if somehow all these people had all come dressed, possibly because in some strange way they knew of my likings. Anyway, it seems as if they'd all dressed, or appear dressed, in the sort of things which I remembered and associated, as if they had some miraculous way of being able to think of past, and able to think of clothes, even, that they were, maybe, of course, that they were clothes that they were very fond of. In the case of my mother, she was always a beautifully gowned woman. She came, as a matter of fact, from a very fine family, much better than my father's family, and she had money in her own right. I often wonder, looking back, I suppose I shouldn't say this, if my father didn't marry as much for her money as anything else. But then again, remembering how happy they were, and they were happy, but then again, a lot of Victorians were. They accepted this idea of marriage, chosen for them and so on, planned, and they learned to live together and they were often very happy. But my mother's people were very comfortable, very well off. My mother was always extremely well dressed. As a matter of fact, we were one of a large family. I was one of a large family. In those days it was a thing. My mother died when she was about 40 or 45. In China, we were 11 children in all, but it was a thing in those days, of course. My father married again And I'm afraid most of us weren't very happy about it. We didn't associate, and most of us had drifted away from home. I never saw my father in the last years of his life. We didn't exactly have words, but I suppose that I was in India. But quite frankly, I always much more attached to my mother and my father. But anyway, it's nice to see them here, and I discovered, much to my amazement, of course, that they weren't living together here. I suppose that was the first big shock I had. I couldn't associate them not being together. I couldn't associate, I suppose, that two people could live together on Earth quite happily and have so many children, and yet over here be good friends and not be tied, not be married, not be together. Of course, I've realized many things that I didn't realize then, that this is quite a normal thing here for people who were on Earth. Though they were married and had many children, would not necessarily be together here. If it was not a soul union, in other words, if they were not right for each other, if they were not ideal for each other, if they were not suited, it's very unique indeed, I believe, for two people on Earth to come together who are absolutely ideally mated. It was easier for me, perhaps, than most, to accept a lot of the theories and ideas and many things which have happened to me since on this side I've learned to understand and accept, and much came to me quite easily, whereas for some people it would have been no doubt very difficult to accept and to understand. Of course, you know, religion, with all due respect, can be a very good thing, of course, for some people, but to a thinking man or a thinking woman, a person who is analytical, who really wants to know truth and is prepared to seek for truth, and who is not prepared to accept something on trust just because a clergyman or a parson says so, or because a book says so. A person who really is a seeker in the highest and the truest sense, that person will find that life here is much easier in the beginning to accept, to understand, to appreciate. And as I've met so many since, of course, who come here with very narrow, prejudiced outlooks, and it's been very hard for them to adjust themselves, to settle, and quite often indeed some of them have settled in communities where they live in a what I would call a fool's paradise. They're quite happy, of course. They are living in a world of their own mind, because that's exactly what it is. It's what they expect, what they want, what they are most pleased and satisfied with. And they continue in their own little way. Of course, sooner or later, most of them will change, many do change. They begin to think this is perhaps rather stupid. They begin to think, once they start thinking, we can help them. That is the thing. They have an open, receptive mind. Be prepared to listen. Be prepared, if necessary, to learn. Do not be too quick to condemn because you don't understand. Just say to yourself, well, I don't understand this, but it's possible. It could be. Perhaps a little later I may receive something that will give me some extra added proof or conviction that will satisfy me. You see, so many people jump to conclusions. So many people accept things on trust. And particularly in religion, one finds it constantly. Everything is accepted on trust. And particularly if the Bible is quoted, I remember my brother used to drive me up the wall with this. No sooner than getting his house, knowing that I was, as he thought, a sinner, he would start on me. Oh, and he tried, but it was useless. In the end, we agreed to differ, and very seldom saw each other. But you know, most extraordinary tussle I've ever had has been with that brother over here. And for a long time, we could not reach him, and he couldn't reach us. My parents and I, and other members of the family, we would visit him, he living in his own environment, among his own kind, perfectly happy. Oh, he couldn't have found a happier man anywhere. He's still carrying on his preaching, still telling people what they should believe, what they should do. He was happiest when he was always happy when he was telling other people to be good, what they should do and what they shouldn't do. He was a real old-fashioned type, of course, pastor. You know, I mean, he really believed in hellfire and damnation. And the mere fact that he preached these things and accepted these things, it was for him a natural thing that he should still preach those things, still talk down to people, still tell people. And he has had his own community, he had his own church, and still carried on his old way here. And for a long time we tried to reach him, but he just would not accept us, not his own family. He just lived in this world which he had created within himself, and everything apart from it was to him of no interest whatsoever. Indeed, he just wouldn't accept me, and he realized that he couldn't do as he thought. He did try to try and convince me that I was wrong even here. But it has taken a long time, but he has now changed, thank goodness. He's altered his outlook. He realizes the futility of going on and on and on incessantly. The same narrow aspect and viewpoint. And fortunately now he is progressing to the extent that his mind is receptive. He's progressing in as much as he's learning greater truths and greater realizations. He's a far happier man, less bigoted man. If only people realize that although religion, true religion, can do a great deal that is good, it can impress and inspire people to do great things. Indeed, we all know this is perfectly true. There are many great souls in the churches. And I don't necessarily just mean the Christian churches, I mean all denominations and all religions. But the point is that so many have such narrow realizations and conceptions. They just feel that they are right and everyone else is wrong. Once people realize the immensity of life, that it isn't just something that is divided between the good and the bad, it isn't between heaven and hell, it isn't between Lucifer and God. We can't just have all black and all white. There are all manner of shades, all differences of color graduation in our thoughts, in our lives, in our actions. In every aspect of life, we must accept the fact that we are all on a path. Sometimes we are groping a little in the darkness, but on your side. But when we see a glimmer of light, then we see a little hope. We should cling to it and try to fan it into a flame. But so many people on earth are afraid. They're afraid to step out boldly. They're afraid to be adventurous. They're afraid to take chances. They cling to something which they feel gives them a form of sense of security, because it's been the thing to do, because they say to themselves, it was good enough for my father, it's good enough for me, and all sorts of arguments they bring up. And so it is that very few people progress in your world in regard to truth. They cling to worn out creeds and dogmas. They have these firm fixed ideas of heaven and hell. They have so many strange theories and ideas which They know within themselves are not true. That's the extraordinary thing about it. Half the parsons that preach the things they preach, they don't believe in them. If they were honest men, they would admit the fact that they don't believe half they preach. And in any case, they know full well that the proof is sadly lacking. But my brother was the same. But you could never beat him down. You could never make him change. He was adamant. Sometimes in those early years, I used to try and reason with him. But you couldn't reason with him. His mind was closed. It was warped.